All right, Rabbosai, good evening. A lot of incredible Gemara tonight. So we are picking up on the bottom of Lamed Aleph of Beis 31b. We are picking up, let's pick up three lines up from the bottom. I know we read a little bit into this already last night, but let's pick up, right? Did we didn't get onto Lamed Beis, did we? No. So let's start up three lines from the bottom. Oh, Rabbi Lazar. Chan heticha dvarm klapi maila. Chana literally again flung her words heavenward. So remember again, as we started to speak about last night, this is the expression when someone speaks almost like in a very intense, almost like chutzpahdik type of way to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Gemara says, Shneimar v'tispala al Hashem, v'tispala al Hashem. Now it doesn't say, interesting, it doesn't say that she davened to Hashem, rather it says that she davened on Hashem, right? Almost as if she was lodging a complaint against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the Gemara says, "Malame she'eticha dvarv klafe maila." So she literally flung her words heavenward. Va'amra b'lazer, Elio etich dvarv klafe maila. Elio did the same thing. Elio Navi, the prophet Elijah, also did the same thing, almost like directed his words, through his words at HaKadosh Baruch Hu, she'nemar, "Ve'ata ha'sibos ha'slibam acharonis." So again, in Elio's situation, Elio was defending Klal Yisrael. And the way Elio defended Klal Yisrael is he blamed HaKadosh Baruch Hu for literally turning around the heart of Klal Yisrael. So he was saying, Ribbono Shel Olam, it's your fault that they're sinning. Right? It's your fault that they're misbehaving. You went ahead and you turned their hearts around. How do we know that Hashem, interestingly enough, came around and agreed with Elio? So remember again, Klal Yisrael during Elio's time, they're sinning. They're sinning. Elio says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's your fault. It's your fault. You turned their hearts around. So the Gemara says, how do you know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu ultimately agreed with Elio? Top of Lamed Beis, we'll say 32a, first line, Dichsiv, Vasher Hareosi. Amazingly enough, HaKadosh Baruch Hu literally says, I wronged them. I wronged them. So you see something amazing over here, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu kiviyachol took responsibility for the poor decisions of Klal Yisrael. Now we're going to develop that theme in just a little bit, because it's really incredible. So a little translation over here is, we're not for the following three psukim, literally again, the legs of the Sonei Yisrael, of those who hate Klal Yisrael, would like dissolve beneath them. Now, the expression, those who hate Klal Yisrael, is a metaphor for sinners, Jewish sinners. Jewish sinners. So essentially what I'm saying is like this. Were not for the following three psukim, there would not be any defense for the Jewish sinner. What are the three psukim? Here we go. Chad dichsiv, v'asher hariosi. So one pasuk where God says, I wronged men. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're going to see the theme over here, the overarching theme. And this is really incredible that HaKadosh Baruch Hu kiviyachol says, I have to share in the responsibility for man's mistakes and errors. Right? I gave man free will. I gave man all this opportunity. Had I not given him all of these things, it's quite possible that he would not be making all of the mistakes that he's making. So to a certain degree, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is almost saying, and again, you have to be careful how you utilize this. This is not freeing us from responsibility. But what it is that it's a little bit of a recognition that HaKadosh Baruch Hu shares in that collective responsibility with us. It's incredible. That's pasuk number one. Chad dechsiv v'asharos. V'chad dechsiv hine kachomer biyad hayotzer kein atem biyadi. Beis Yisrael. So also it's incredible. Pasuk in Yom Yom that we say on davening and Yomim Noraim, that we say that we are like literally again clay in the hands of the craftsman. Clay meaning what? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you have control. If you wanted to prevent me from sinning, or for that matter, again, if you didn't want to implant inside of me certain yetzer haras, then I wouldn't have it. We'll say, you know, this is a big thing. Like a lot of times in life, we struggle with things. And the truth is, my struggles, we'll say, you know, sometimes you struggle with things because I placed myself in the wrong situation. And then sometimes I struggle with things because there are certain things that are just like innate. I just have certain innate struggles, certain innate proclivities or desires or inclinations. So it's almost as if Sechesh Baruch Hu and Rabban Shalom, you know, no offense, but it's your fault. Like, in other words, you put me, why? You didn't have to make it this way. So these psukim really represent almost like a quasi-defense. Now again, remember, you don't want to rely on this after 120, right? The goal is to try to be able to live lives that stand on their own. But at the same time, these psukim do act as a defense for us. The Gemara goes on. Last pasuk, v'chad dichsiv Vasirosi esleif ha'evem mibsarchem, v'nasati lachem leiv basar. The last pasuk, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I will remove from you the heart of stone from your flesh, and I will give you a heart of flesh. So what do you see from here? That if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to, he could change our heart. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could change the way we feel, the way we think, the way we look at the world. So because God has that ultimate power, and often he chooses not to exercise it, so therefore to a certain degree, there's almost like a shared responsibility. This gives us, and I will say, I just want to be clear, it doesn't give us an out. It doesn't give us an out. But what it does is perhaps lessen the intensity of our personalistic culpability. Okay, Rav Papa says from this pasuk, "Ve'esruchi etein bekerbechem, va'asisi eis asher b'chukai teilechu." So again, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, "I'll place my spirit inside of you, and if I do so, you will walk in my ways." So you see from here this idea. You see from here this idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu acknowledges that if I would just place a little bit more kedusha into the heart of man, that ultimately, again, we would continue in the right path in life. Incredible. All right, so now back to what we're talking about before. V'amar v'lozer, Moshe hitiach dvarim klape maila. Moshe Rabbeinu also flung words heavenward. So this idea of people talking like in an intense, almost like, to a certain degree, I will say, almost like an attacking way to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now again, they're doing it all for a higher purpose. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu do it? Shneemar, Vayispalel Moshe El Hashem. Moshe davened to Hashem. Al tekri El Hashem. Don't read to Hashem, rather Al Hashem. Rather, again, Moshe Rabbeinu was davening. Literally, Al Hashem means on God. Ultimately, again, but almost like against God. So this is when Klal Yisrael was being punished for a particular infraction. Moshe Rabbeinu almost like charges at HaKadosh Baruch Hu to get him to stop the plague that is consuming Klal Yisrael. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, korin la'alfin einin, u'la'einin alfin. In Yeshiva Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov, they used to say that sometimes biblically, you could swap out alephs for ayins and ayins for alephs. So therefore, El Hashem with an aleph could be understood as Al Hashem. That Moshe Rabbeinu Kivyachol is coming at God with a very intense and almost like provocative type of argument. The Gemara says, listen to this. Where else did Moshe Rabbeinu defend Klal Yisrael? Debei Rabbi Yane Amri Mehacha. Nishir Rabbi Yane, they said, here is the example of how Moshe Rabbeinu literally again, like through his words at HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Listen to this. V'dizahav. So Moshe says, this is actually very interesting. So this is in the beginning of Chumash Devarim. Literally the first pasuk in Chumash Devarim. The Torah is going through the various places that Klal Yisrael sojourned, where they traveled during their 40 years in the desert. One of the places that was named is a place called Di Zahav. There's only one problem. Which is, there is no place named Di Zahav. There's no such location. So what's going on over here? Listen to this. So the Gemara says, "My Vidi Zahav." So what is Vidi Zahav? Amri Divrei Rav Yanai, Kach Amar Moshe Ifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is what Moshe Rabbeinu said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ribono Shel Olam, Bishil Kesef V'Zav Sheshbata Lahem Li Yisrael, Ad She'amru Dai, Hu Garam She'asu Es HaEgel. This is wild. Di Zahav, the Gemara says, is not a place. Di Zahav is actually descriptive of an argument that Moshe Rabbeinu lodged against God in defense of Klal Yisrael. So remember, I will say, there are certain, this is actually an important yisod. You know, the Gemara says that there is no misfortune that befalls Klal Yisrael that is not somehow rooted or somehow reciprocity for the sin of the golden calf. Right? The sin of the golden calf is considered to be historically one of the greatest chaton, one of the greatest sins of Klal Yisrael. You know, the Gemara compares it to a bride who commits adultery underneath the chuppah. Klal Yisrael was the chuppah, it was the marriage. So obviously, again, adultery is always bad. But you can imagine, again, under the chuppah, where a couple is first forging their marital bond. And in that moment where the relationship is so fresh, it's so new, and then there's such an act of trespass, such an act of rebellion, such an act of inappropriateness, it fractures the relationship almost in an irreversible, right? Even if somehow husband and wife are able to reconcile after that in some way, there's a taint, right? There's a tarnish. So that's how Klal Yisrael described the sin of the golden calf. So remember again, we stood at Har Sinai receiving the Torah. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the chasan, the groom. Klal Yisrael, we were the kala. Har Sinai was the chuppah. And as this beautiful union is taking shape, what do? We run to someone else. we run to the sin of the golden calf. As such, it created just like a profound sense of relationship trauma for HaKadosh Baruch Hu and for Klal Yisrael. So it was, you know, it's interesting that in life, like, you see this, I mean, not to this degree, hopefully, but you see, like, there are really different kinds of mistakes, and by extension, different kinds of decisions that we make. And I will say, on any given day, there are many decisions that we make. A good number of them, I don't know, maybe certain for everybody, but like a good number of them may be inconsequential, right? Like, what you eat for dinner doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things, right? Or what you decide to wear doesn't matter. Or a lot of things like that. But then, like, in life, you have these decisions that are dramatic. And often, the chap in life is, sometimes I don't know which decision, or let's say it differently, I don't realize how dramatic the decision is at the moment that I have to make it. It's only often in life, in retrospect, that I look back and I say, wow, you know what? That decision pivoted my life in a dramatically different way. And often it's only retrospective that we see it. It's the same thing with mistakes. Baruch Hashem, the good news is, most mistakes you could rebound from. And most mistakes you could rebound from relatively easily. But in life, every once in a while, there are mistakes that we made. I will say that forever change the trajectory of our lives. No, don't all of us, I don't know, except maybe, I'm looking over here at the Artmans and Beezy. You're young. You're the young guys over here, right? So whatever. But like as we get older, you know, we look back at mistakes that I can't change. In other words, I'm doing better. I'm not repeating them. But I can't undo the damage that's done. And I will say, for those of us who have mistakes like that, those mistakes, those are haunting. Those are haunting. Because at the end of the day, no matter how much I try to do better going forward, like the specter of that mistake that often changed the trajectory of my life, okay, I learned from it, I grew from it, but I can't change it. Chet HaEgel is one of those episodes. Like, so we did Shuva, Klal Yisrael put it, but it put us on a different trajectory. That's it. And to a certain degree, an irreversible trajectory. But yet Moshe Rabbeinu, the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu, is that he was the consummate defender of Klal Yisrael. So what does he say to God? This is incredible. I was saying, again, don't try this at home. He says, Chesh Baruch Hu, it's your fault. It's your fault. Why is it your fault? What do we build a calf out of? What do we build a calf out of? Gold. And I will say, if you're willing just to give away your gold to build a calf, what does that tell you about your financial situation? It's pretty good. Right, because that means that's surplus cash, right? I dipped into the IRA, whatever it was. You know, I took a little bit out of savings. In other words, no one's giving away their gold to build a calf if just you have a very limited amount of gold. They came out of Egypt ridiculously wealthy. So Moshe Rabbeinu says, Chesh Baruch Hu, God, I don't mean to deflect blame, but the only reason they built a calf is because they left Egypt with all of that wealth. And who gave them all of that wealth? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that was you. So you want to get upset for Klal Yisrael for doing whatever they did, you can get upset, but let's agree that there's shared blame over here. Let's agree that there's shared responsibility. And the Gemara says, that's the meaning of Di Zahav. Di Zahav means Dai Zahav, enough gold, too much gold, that Moshe Rabbeinu says, Chesh Baruch Hu, because you brought them out of Egypt, and they had so much gold that they said enough, that's why they built the golden calf. I will say, it's also just a tremendous lesson in leadership. What is the job of a leader? What is the job of a leader? The job of the leader is to look out for the welfare and the continuity of his constituents. That's it. And whatever you have to do, even if it means arguing with God, that's what you have to be prepared to do. Incredible. Amid Rabbi Yonai. So the Gemara gives examples of this. Ein ari noheim mitoch kupa shel tevin el mitoch kupa shel basar. For example, a lion only roars, right? Or I say a lion doesn't roar when it's eating straw. It only roars when it's eating meat. In other words, we'll say, what does that mean? The metaphor is that the lion roars when its stomach is full. We'll say, when do people do bad things in life? When do people commit averus? And I will say, here's what's interesting. Generally, when people are struggling financially, so I don't know that this is a clinical fact, but I think it's true that generally they're not sinning as much, right? Why? I'm sorry? Yeah, but I know what I have to do. I know what I have to accomplish. And the truth is, like, it takes a lot of my emotional and spiritual bandwidth just to stay afloat. When do we tend to get ourselves into trouble? When you have excess. Suddenly, when you have excess, that's when we tend to kind of get ourselves. So the Gemara says the lion doesn't roar. Roar is like the metaphor for like acting out. The lion doesn't roar when he's eating straw, right? Because then he's humbled when he's eating straw. When he's eating meat, right? When Klal Yisrael has a lot of money, a lot of gold. That's when we get ourselves into trouble. I'm Rav Oshia. Mashlama Adavatoma. So I'll say, what can this be compared to? La Adam Shahaisalo Parakehusha Ubala Sevarim. Like a cow that was very weak and very skinny. Heachila Karshin and Vahisimava Atasbo. So what happened? So the cow, when it was very hungry and very weak and very skinny, was very docile. Then suddenly what happened? The owner went ahead and fed it. Vahisimava Atasbo, and the cow kicked him. So the owner says, what caused you to kick me? Must have been the food you just eat. You know, when you were hungry, you were docile and obedient. But now that you're full, you're acting out a little bit. And I will say, it's human nature. Human nature is when I'm insecure, I'm usually humble. And when I become secure, or maybe even live a little bit in the world of excess, that's when I tend to act out. I'm Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, I'm Rabbi Yochanan. Mashallah Adam, I'll say it's incredible. Mashallah Adam Echad, Shahayalo Ben. I'll say this could be compared to a man who had a son. So I'll say this man, he pampered his son. So he washed him and he anointed him with oil and he gave him good food to eat and good drink to drink. And then he gave him a bag of money. He hung a bag of money around his neck. And he put him in front of a brothel. So I'll say, so just understand the mashal, right? The kid is always taken care of. The kid is always pampered, right? The kid never wants for anything. Now, he's got a bag of money, and he's standing in front of a brothel. So the Gemara says, Ma ya'ase osa ben shelo yechta. Almost like the Gemara says is, we know that the kid is going to sin. In other words, so again, I will say, it's all part of the same argument. It's almost as if Moshe Rabbeinu says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you set them up. You know, they went from slavery. They are ridiculously wealthy. They're fed every day with the man, right? Everything is going great. Everything is going beautiful. Literally, you gave them a bag of money. Hanging around their neck. What do you think is going to happen? I will say, by the way, it's also a tremendous, tremendous lesson in chinuch. About how we raise our children, how we structure our families. Of course, every parent wants to go ahead and provide for their child. And I will say, but one has to be very careful between providing and spoiling. Because providing helps a child to have a beautiful sense of self, a beautiful sense of security, all these incredible things. Spoiling leads to entitlement. Entitlement and often leads to all types of egregious behavior. And sometimes, again, parents wonder, oh, why did my kid do this, my kid do that? Now, sometimes it's just because kids have their own free choices, right? So parents, I want to be clear, we all know this. Parents could do everything right, and yet their kids still make their own decisions. But sometimes there was a flaw, or there is a flaw, in the way that I'm parenting. And I'm enabling my child to make the wrong kinds of decisions. Incredible. So the Gemara says, we'll stop over here for today. Again, we'll say, so we're picking up at that first white line. Incredible. Just incredible Gemara, we'll say, right? Chock full of everything. Shkach Reb Shmuel for the delicious tea. Mariv. Yeah, putting your kid by a Bezonos. I think, I didn't look around in all the commentaries, but I